I have I have a congrats.
Football America live and underway here on ESPN Plus. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Herc, Tyler Adams greeting Weston McKinney, kind of like you greeted me at the airport in Doha, right?
That's right, my man. Always good to be with you. How you doing?
Great. What are you wearing over there? Your shirt looks interesting.
I don't know where it's from, but this is like a little 8-bit of the starting lineup versus Colombia, 1994.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only noticeable one's probably this guy.
Is that Alexi? Alexi Lalas there with the red hair.
Alexi Lalas right there. But look at that. Look at this guy. Look at those uniforms right there. Mm-hmm. It's a good starting lineup right there.
Beauty. A beauty.
It's too bad that whole generation's weird, but good footballers.
Steady. They might say the same about your generation one day.
2010.
If you want to listen to us, make sure to check out the Football Americas podcast. On this week's edition of the pod, you will hear what we're going to be talking about coming up in this show, and Hercules Gomez, there is quite a bit. We're going to be reacting to Ernie Stewart's departure at U.S. Soccer. Claudio Reyna has also stepped down in Austin. A full weekend of news. We now know officially, Herc, that Copa America 2024 will be coming to the United States as part of a strategic partnership, they're calling it, between CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. As you just saw there, Weston McKinney has made the transfer to Leeds. We're going to hear from him one-on-one with our Mark Ogden. Very impressive there. Plus, we'll dive into a weird debate. Wrexham versus Major League Soccer. Huh. That's for later in the show. Very, very online.
It's all American soccer.
Let's start with what was going on this weekend out in Los Angeles, United States against Colombia. Second friendly of this January window. Herc chose not to go to this one. Couldn't be bothered. Sixth minute. Paxton Aaronson with a chance, denied.
Yeah, that was my bad. I actually tried going last minute, didn't work out. But this is a good little ball from Walker Zimmerman. This is a good, good run from Matthew Hoppe. The touch should have been a lot more direct to goal, a little bit more selfish. Paxton Aaronson, good layoff, just couldn't get enough on it.
What's up? U.S. Soccer doesn't like you. They didn't want to get you some tickets. What about our guy Sean Johnson? He couldn't get you some tickets?
No, you know what? U.S. Soccer's fine. This is a good little combination, by the way. Paxton Aaronson, he's going to want that one back. Oh, the slightest of touches. A second bite of the apple for him. A no-go.
Paxton Aaronson off the post there. 32nd minute. Matthew Hoppe again. Should he have given it up to Paul Areola there?
No. He should have finished it. You got a score there. It's a great ball by Jesus Ferreira, who isn't a 9, as you can see. More like
Walker
a 10.
Zimmerman. Corner kick in the second half. Header over the bar. 85th minute. Kellen Acosta. Brendan Vasquez, Herc, should he have done better?
Yeah, he knows it too. This is the first of two that he had. This is what you want. You want to come in, make an impact, that's you right there, and then, uh-oh, you thought they were in trouble. Jalen Neal takes him wide, should have hit the target there. We stay at zeros.
Not a lot of chances for Colombia. The game ends in a scoreless draw between these two teams. Take a look at the statistics. The U.S. against Serbia and Colombia. So Herc, two games, no wins. What did we get out of this January camp in the ensuing friendlies?
I guess a clarity that there should be no more January camp going forward?
No more at all? So you got zero out of this. Nothing productive happened.
So the productive part would be that I realize you should phase out January camp. This is the definition of a juego molero. We criticize when the Mexican national team does this on U.S. soil, how they sell tickets for a glorified friendly with their C&D product. Well, this is essentially that. Jalen Neal ended up playing these two games. Jalen Neal's not even played for the LA Galaxy, the 19-year-old. If you want to phase it out and just make it a U23 camp, I am completely fine with that. January camp used to fulfill a need. It had a purpose in U.S. soccer. They were for the players that you had that were essentially maybe your B players, some of your A players, and for them to get them going and get those legs fresh, get them introduced into this new program, if you will. But if essentially this is the C/D team, if you will, and the majority of your players are in Europe, what are you really getting out of this? You're promoting a product at half gas. You're promoting players that not even started their preseason yet, or actually a week into their preseason, if you will. So I don't know what you get out of it except selling a gate, except selling sponsorships. I don't know how these players can actually show you something when they're all trying to get into shape. So it's fulfilled its need. If you want to say identify players for the future, make it a U23 camp. I have no issue with that.
Okay.
But don't for one second just be like, hey, people in LA don't like these games. I think they're sophisticated and smart enough to know what they're going to get, and they don't go to these games.
Right. So your point is that the games shouldn't happen. You're not necessarily about abolishing January camp entirely, right? Because last week on the show, we did this whole segment that the gems of January camp, all the finds over the years, and a lot of them, to your point, were from many, many moons ago, right? We were talking about the early 2000s, but there were some good recent ones. Matt Turner's one, Jesus Ferreira's one, Brendan Aaronson is a recent January camp guy. So, like, for those guys, there is some benefit. You do want to see the camp continue. Just think the games aren't worth
anything. Those guys were going to get called up regardless. What I want to see is the next generation or future generations. That's why I have no problem with it being a U23 camp. But if you're going to show me a 29-year-old Julian Gressel, with all due respect to Julian Gressel, he's a good footballer, or a center back pairing in Walker Zimmerman and Aaron Long, I don't need to see that. I don't know what you get out of that. Listen, Brandon Vasquez, Matt Turner, there's always these gems that you can integrate but potentially have a place in the first team. Mm-hmm. But I think it does you very little to see a combination of C and D players together, excuse me, and trot them out in a preseason glorified exhibition and say, show me what you got. It's almost unfair to those players.
The one area where I think we are kind of missing the point here, if we say there's zero benefit to January camp and maybe even these games, I would even put some more value on these games in this sense, is the recruiting. We talk a lot about the dual nationals and the guys who have choices of where to play. Remember the game against Serbia? What was it? 7 of the 11 were dual nationals, all still with the opportunity to play for another country. I think these January camp games and the camps themselves and the games which are non-committal, so it's a non-pressurized situation, it gives guys who still want to keep that door open to another choice the opportunity to come in, put on the colors, experience a game. Now, that opportunity would mean more if the guy you were playing for wasn't Anthony Hudson, if it was actually the guy who was going to be in charge in the future. But I think it does. I think if we're going to give U.S. soccer credit for recruiting, we have to look at where. I mean, Jesus Ferreira is a perfect example of that. When they called him in, he's eligible for Colombia, the United States. He ends up getting called into camp. Soon enough, he's cap tied, and he became a big part of the team, not just through qualifying, but obviously, at least for a little bit, in the knockout rounds of the World Cup. There's something significant there.
There's something significant for January camp, the games, or to bringing these players in?
To bringing them in, to getting games.
Oh.
I think games is a part of that. I think it's harder to pull guys away from clubs.
I find it disingenuous on your part how you criticize and you kill Mexican soccer for the Juego Moleros, but you're okay with this January camp. You don't bring up the it's a good way for them to identify players. It's good for the recruitment of the dual nationals.
Yeah, but they never call up anybody new or interesting. They call up the same old guys.
Time out. This is when you see
that. That's the point.
No, that's a lie. This is when you see the David Ochoas, the Efraín Álvarez. This is when you see the Julián Araujos.
Oh, come on.
That is disingenuous on your part. Now, I take issue with that. Why is it okay for one and not the other? This is
I see a value to this.
I
don't care if you don't want to play the games, that's fine, because the competition in these games is a joke. It's just like it's the U.S. B or C team. It's Serbia's B or C team. It's Colombia's B or C
team. Seb. It's not even. So when the majority of your base is now in Europe, who are you really identifying? Who are you really looking at here? It's not the same thing as with Matt Turner. I'm telling you, these moments are being phased out.
So you don't think that Brandon Vasquez scoring a goal for the United States, wearing that shirt, if Mexico were to ever come calling, that could weigh on him? You don't think there's a value to that in that tug of war, in that recruiting battle for a player?
So what you're telling me is you're doing this exactly for recruiting. I just want to know. That's exactly what you want. You want this.
It's a huge benefit, yes.
I just want to
know. And it's a huge part of what the United States needs to do.
So the fans should continue to go out and try out their hard-earned money.
Sure, if you want to see the future of the program.
On a C&D team.
That's what you want. If you believe it's the future of the program, yes.
Okay. You believe this is the future of the program.
So you don't think people should go to January camp?
No, I'm just curious. Walker Zimmerman, Aaron Long, the future of the program. That's what we're getting at here.
Those are two guys.
No, Julian Gressel, the future of the program. That's what we're getting at here.
That were called up.
Paul Ariola, the future of the program. That's what we're getting at here.
Brandon Vasquez could be your starting nine. Alejandro Zendejas.
Seb, if you want to make it a U23 camp, okay, I've got zero issue. I take issue with C and D players in preseason and you selling out like a full team. I take issue with that. Now, if fans want to go and spend their money on that, no problem. But don't sit here and criticize the Juego Moleros on the Mexican side and not criticize these.
Okay. Hercules Gomez has spoken. Let's see what he thinks about Anthony Hudson. Anthony Hudson, two games, no wins. Has he given you enough, Hercules Gomez, to convince you that he should stay on as interim coach? Because we got some big games coming up. Gold Cup in the summer, of course. But in March, we have CONCACAF Nations League, which we just found out, and we will discuss this later, is actually important because it'll be used as qualifying for the CONCACAF teams that eventually will be entered in the 2024 Copa America. So, Herc, what do you think? Hudson, should he stay on?
This is, I see the need for Hudson in the first two games, right? What are you going to go find somebody else who wasn't part of it? Fine, whatever. But if now there's skin in the game, if now you're going to coach a team in a tournament, official FIFA tournament, official CONCACAF tournament, I see no need for him. And what worries me is that Anthony Hudson keeps referring to the program as ours, we, talking in the tense of when he was with Greg Berhalter. I want to seriously ask if there's communication with Greg Berhalter, if he's taken into consideration Greg Berhalter's word or opinion when now calling these players in. Because you're going along with the same mantra, same identity, same system as when Greg Berhalter was there. Now, if it's Anthony Hudson's by himself with the record of 48 games with the Colorado Rapids, 8 wins, 10 draws, and 28 losses, be good enough to coach the U.S. men's national team? I think not. I understand that you need to go out and get a sporting director, a GM, whatever the case may be, and then go from there with a coach. And then you have a solid base, an identity, an idea of who you are and who you want to go for. But this makes a little sense for me when there's actually something to play for. And especially when you're talking about the recruitment, because you're very big on Brandon Vasquez, Zendejas, the recruitment. Who's recruiting these players? If I'm one of these top players that has a choice and I see the program right now and it's Anthony Hudson, maybe I'm thinking twice.
Well, what do you do then? Right? Because as you mentioned, we have to figure out what's next. We're going to talk about Ernie Stewart in just a moment. But we're not going to have a head coach until we have a sporting director.
Yep.
And we're not going to have a sporting director for a while. I think we have to be honest about that. That's not going to be a quick hire, it doesn't look like. So are you okay with Anthony Hudson through March? Are you okay with him through Gold Cup? And if not, give me a solution. Give me somebody who, A, you'd feel comfortable with, and B, who would take the job. Because I don't think being an interim coach is that enticing of a job to anyone.
Yeah, that's a good question, Seb. And I put it on social media, like, if they were to give, let's say, a domestic coach the opportunity to coach his club, and then on FIFA fixture dates, coach the national team, whether it's a Jim Curtin or a Steve Cherundolo. Actually, Steve Cherundolo makes a lot of sense because I think players will respect him because of his resume, because of where he's been, because of the national team, et cetera, et cetera. It'd make things a little bit more digestible on my part than saying Anthony Hudson's at the helm. And I understand no Brian McBride. I understand no Ernie Stewart. And there was somebody that day-to-day with the European clubs, that day-to-day with other sporting directors, with other head coaches, kind of being that liaison, the ambassador, if you will, between these two setups. I don't know how important that is when it's a FIFA fixture date and it's just certain guys, you just got to get in, get them out for this. I still don't like Anthony Hudson here.
Yeah,
it makes me question a lot.
All right, is there a value, Herc, to continuity here for Nations League at least and maybe even for Gold Cup with Anthony Hudson? Because eventually the guys that you bring back from Europe are going to be the guys that worked under Greg Berhalter, that system throughout qualifying in the World Cup, and also during that time worked under Anthony Hudson. Or are you suggesting there needs to be a clean break And I think that's kind of what you were getting to towards the beginning of this conversation.
You want
a clean break from Greg Berhalter, even in the interim.
I do. You mentioned recruitment. Now, I love that you said recruitment because I think this goes both
ways. You're just killing me for it.
No. I'm going to use your words against you. It's not even against you. You're just going to prove my point here.
Okay.
How important is recruitment and when is it important? When is it most important? January camp or CONCACAF Nations League? When would it matter most?
Well, Nations League is when you get people cap tied.
There you go.
Yeah.
So Balogun right now, who's at the tip of everybody's tongue, okay, a dual national right now. If you were able to convince him with an interim coach, that is a win. But if because there's an interim coach that he's not quite there yet, you know what? I'm going to hold off. Shouldn't that be a loss?
I mean, so are we going to judge Anthony Hudson on whether he can land Balogun in the next?
No. I'm not judging him. I'm telling you, you could do far more harm than good by sticking with Anthony Hudson. What's worst case scenario?
Okay.
What's best case scenario? Right?
Best case scenario is you bring an interim coach in and they land Balogun in March. That's your best case scenario.
No, with Anthony Hudson, what's best case scenario? He just wins the tournament that the U.S. is supposed to win or supposed to get out of, I should say, qualify for. Because I think if makes it to the final and lose to Mexico, it's a lot of people would be upset. But you could see that happening, right?
I don't think anybody has officially ruled Anthony Hudson out of the job search. But I think we all know Anthony Hudson's not a real candidate for
this
job.
But that's best case scenario. What's worst case scenario, Seb? That you don't even qualify for this Copa America, that you lose out on dual nats.
Right.
I mean, that's where I'm going with this. And I know that could be far-fetched.
And you think there'd be less risk bringing somebody else new in who had no continuity with this
group? I'm going to say this again in later segments in the future, but think about this for a second, okay? There were reports per The Athletic that players did not respect Greg Berhalter, okay? Mm-hmm. Who he was as a coach, where he's been. For the first time, you have a pool that's been coached by the likes, listen to this, okay? It's been coached by the likes of Pep Guardiola, Mikel Arteta, been coached by the likes of Jose Mourinho, been coached by the likes of, who else? Xavi, been coached by the likes of some of the best coaches in the modern game, okay? And now you want to trot out Anthony Hudson. I say this with all the respect to Anthony Hudson. It's not his fault that he's been put in this position. Or whoever the new coach may be. Whoever that coach is, you've got to win that locker room over. It's not as easy anymore. These players have been places.
All right, Anthony Hudson then in charge of the U.S. men's national team for now as the interim coach. Let's run it back, USMNT edition. We'll start with the aforementioned Polarin Balogun, his 11th league goal of the season. It comes late as Reims gets a 1-1 draw against PSG.
11 goals, my man, 21 years old. You said it, dual nat, U.S., Nigeria, and England.
Mm-hmm. Lots of options. Hopefully he'll pick the U.S. Could sure use a number 9. He wasn't the only number 9 that scored in and around the U.S. pool. Ricardo Pepi, his 7th of the season, unfortunately came in a loss as Groningen fell 3-2 to Volendam.
Yeah, but Ricardo needs to keep scoring. That's his 11th goal contribution in 14 games for the 20-year-old from El Paso, Texas.
Groningen right now, by the way, in last place, buried in the relegation fight. Another goal, this one from 19-year-old Kevin Paredes, his first Bundesliga goal for the ex-DC United man.
There we go. Where's he from? South Reading, Virginia? Is that where it's at? Reading? South Reading?
Bethesda Soccer Club shout-out is...
All right, give him a shout-out.
Like
I'll tell
there.
You what. Give him a shout-out. I'm going to give away another Paredes jersey.
Another one? Where do you keep getting these jerseys,
you
dog?
You don't worry about that. I'm going to make sure he signs it as well, all right? Keep an eye out for that.
Wolfsburg fell 2-1 to Werder Bremen in this game. To La Liga, Luca de la Torre with his first La Liga assist. It comes as Celta de Vigo wins 1-0 over Athletic Club de Bilbao.
Second start, first assist, that's all I'm saying. Maybe somebody should have played a little bit more in the World Cup. That's all I'm saying. I lost a bet. That's all I'm saying.
By the way, a huge assist and a huge win for Celta de Vigo. It climbs them up out of the relegation zone. From Spain and La Liga, which you can watch on ESPN+, to the Eredivisie, which you can also watch on ESPN+, Jordi Mihailovic with his first Eredivisie assist since moving from Montreal.
All right, like 3 days ago, he scored his first goal. Now it's his first assist. This was a banger of a game, by the way. Mm-hmm. Insane game, 5-5. He gets his assist. Jordy again, coming into his own in the Eredivisie.
Now, you mentioned it. Mihajlović with an assist in the 5-5 draw against Utrecht. So this is the same game. Taylor Booth, his third assist of the season for the 21-year-old uncapped American.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This kid's not only growing on me, he is nasty. 5-5, he was easily involved in 4 of the 5 goals for his team. Keeps shining. That's his third of the campaign.
Once on Bayern's books, a product of the RSL Academy. As we mentioned, La Liga on ESPN Plus on Thursday. It's Real Madrid against, maybe Yunus Musa and Valencia. Don't miss it. Coverage starts 3 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday right here on ESPN Plus.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Okay, Herc, big news. Late last week, Ernie Stewart is leaving his role as sporting director at U.S. Soccer to take on a similar job, actually, at PSV Eindhoven in the Dutch top flight. Of course, Ernie Stewart, born in the Netherlands, family still there, so going home in many respects. Stewart was named GM of the U.S. national team in 2018. In 2019, he was named sporting director. Herc, is this good or bad news for U.S. soccer?
You know, all things considered, I don't think it's positive news. Now, he leaves U.S. soccer. The timing is strange, but apparently this decision was already taken. He wants to be closer to his family, which is in Holland. PSV, it's a massive job. Let's not compare the two because I don't think there is a comparison. I think that's a bigger job, if you will. Now, I know people want to blow up the establishment. They want to just burn everything down. But Ernie Stewart, you could question why he was taking phone calls from the mother of a player.
Yep.
But all things considered,
I did question that. That is correct.
I was one of them as well, right? But we don't know exactly the extent of that. All we know is that he found out sensitive information and he ran it up the ladder. Proper protocol. That's what we do know. We don't know if he was constantly in contact with Daniel Reyna. All we know is he was contacted by Daniel Reyna, found out this sensitive information, ran it up the ladder, proper protocol, and here we are today. Essentially, he did his job, right? He didn't hide anything from anybody. He did his job. Not having Ernie Stewart in this position now, it just sets the U.S. men's national team back. It sets, honestly, the search for a coach back, because you have to fulfill that role, Ernie Stewart's role, right now, before you could even get to a coach. You can't hire a coach and then hire Ernie Stewart's successor. That's not how it works. So now you're going to have to wait for the person who comes in after Ernie, whichever that person is. They will then go on a coaching search. If you thought it was bad enough having to wait 13 months for Greg Berhalter to coach the Columbus Crew before the U.S. men's national team got up and going, this is going to be so much more stressful. Because by the time they get this person in charge, certain coaches that may be actual candidates could be gone.
I don't know that I see it as such a bad thing for the U.S. men's national
team. I just said it wasn't a positive.
Okay, not a positive. I do see some positives here. The negatives are clear, right? There's not an organization in the world that, what, just over 3 years now from the biggest World Cup in its history and this time I think it's fair to actually say that, would want to have
no
head coach, no GM, and no sporting director. That's not ideal. Nobody would draw up that plan.
Right.
That said, to your point, Ernie Stewart did take the call. He was part of the scandal that is melting down U.S. soccer right now. On top of that, he was part of the hiring process that landed Greg Berhalter in the job, something you criticized quite a bit.
Was he?
Okay? Yes. Yeah, Greg, he joins the Fed. Yes. Yes.
You sure Greg wasn't there before Ernie?
Yes, I'm sure.
Okay.
I'm sure. So Ernie Stewart is part of the process that lands us with Greg Berhalter. Do you have confidence that Ernie Stewart would have landed anybody else? Because remember that process, Herc. Who did we end up getting? Greg Berhalter and an Oscar Pareja maybe interview?
Right.
Like it's not like Ernie Stewart had some incredible Rolodex or incredible network of context that he could plug into to get somebody amazing in that job. The big point here, Herc, is who are you going to hire to be the next head coach of the U.S. men's national team? And I think there probably is somebody out there that U.S. soccer could hire who would have a better list of candidates than Ernie Stewart.
Okay.
You don't agree?
Okay, who? I'm not saying that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
If that person is out there, bring him on, right? But that's the thing right now. If you look now, I would love to get away from this U.S. soccer bubble, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest problems that U.S. soccer had was a majority of these figureheads being from the same era.
Mm-hmm.
One of the craziest eras in American football. Dysfunctional, if you will. U.S. soccer isn't a world beater. U.S. Mm-hmm. soccer isn't amongst the best in the world. I don't know if they have the funds to go out and get some that are amongst the best in the world. But if you can, would you not?
Yes, of course. Give me a name. Who are you thinking? Who's a sporting director that's number one in the world? If you can pay enough money to stop championing FIFA's stupid ideas, Arsene Wenger would be a great name.
Ooh.
How about that, Beto, producer Beto, Arsenal fan?
Oh.
How about Dennis De Close? How about a more realistic name?
I love Dennis De Close.
Worked youth national teams with Mexico.
Love the name.
Knows Major League Soccer with LA Galaxy. Has European contacts.
He would have to get clearance from, I would think, the Federation right now, or Major League Soccer was tied into the Federation because there's still that investigation. Well, I don't even think it's concluded with Chris Klein and whatnot. But he's a name that I completely love and I think would be good because he knows lots of market, would handle certain, tick a lot of boxes, right? Check a lot of boxes. Recruitment, which you think is a big, big thing right now in U.S. soccer, I think he'd check that box. A Rolodex of international figures, he would check that box. An understanding of the makeup of U.S. soccer, he would check that box. An understanding of their rival, he would check that box. I love that name, but I don't think you have to limit yourself into a name that's regional because you know, he's with Feyenoord right now, but I really think U.S. soccer is an attractive enough job where you can get some of the biggest figureheads in the world.
All right, real quick. Stewart's gone. McBride's gone. Berhalter's out of contract, but Cindy Parlow-Cohn says he's still a candidate. It's over for Berhalter, right? There's no way he's coming back with Stewart gone. His allies are all gone.
Yeah, man. You know, you keep asking me this, and I know why. Because the producer keeps putting in the rundown. But I...
No, because Cindy Parlow-Cohn keeps saying he's a candidate.
Everybody keeps saying. He's yelling at me right now. Because everybody keeps bringing him up. I've... said every single time we've spoken about Greg Berhalter, he wasn't my choice and he wasn't going to be there for sporting reasons. I didn't think he was good enough to lead this team, or I don't feel he's good enough to lead this team in 2026. Mm-hmm. You add everything that's happened since the World Cup. In the World Cup, the way he handled it, the symposium, with the news getting out, being leaked, and the fallout till now, I don't see how he survives this. It's a PR nightmare. I don't think U.S. soccer would take this on. It would be crazy to take this on. I just don't see any possible way of him maintaining that job.
I think there's a reason why Cindy Parlow-Cohn keeps saying he's a candidate.
Don't
it's because she has to say that until the investigation is complete. We're told, ESPN has been told, that investigation should wrap up in the next week or two. We'll keep an eye on what comes of that. Ernie Stewart to PSV. Maybe that'll be a good landing spot for Greg Berhalter.
Oh,
speaking of Greg Berhalter, Claudio Reyna also in the headlines because he stepped down as sporting director of Austin FC. The MLS club announcing Reyna will, quote, transition into a technical advisor role. This comes in the aftermath of the controversy over Reyna's involvement in his son's World Cup participation. Of course, Austin reaching the Western Conference Finals last year in just their second season. Claudio Reyna stepping down as sporting director at Austin FC. Herc, are you surprised?
Kinda. Not really. I am, because I really didn't think Anthony Precourt cared that much, right? But then, I mean this, but then you think about it, and this is more like a, hey, go away for a bit, you'll still get paid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who knows if you'll come back, but you're still getting paid. Let's wait until things cool down, but you're still getting paid. So I am kind of surprised, because I guess it's a move, but it's really not a move. It's like, hey, go take a timeout. So I'm not surprised. Did anything really change? He's getting paid.
Yeah. Herc, you always, I don't know how to explain this. You always explain how some offenses are worth being fired over, depending on your performance, right? So if you're like a great superstar and you do something bad, maybe the club will overlook it. If you're the 35th guy on the depth chart and you do something bad, you'll be cut.
There's preferential treatment for everybody in the organization, I think.
From what we understand here, right? Remember, blackmail was floated on a lot early in this. We've not even seen charges filed or anything like that as far as blackmail. It doesn't appear that Claudio Reyna did anything illegal here. He might have done something petty and scandalous, but he's done a good job, at least on paper, as Austin FC's sporting director. It is surprising to me that they let him go, because this would be something where you could have looked the other way. That they allow him to step down. That does surprise me, because this is very much something where if you felt the person was doing a good job, I think you'd turn the other cheek. And it seems like he's done a good job.
Well, I think this is them turning the other cheek, Seb.
You think they'd out and out fire him, terminate contract? If not, do you think it reaches that level, what he did?
Per ESPN's reporting, he sent threatening messages to members of U.S. soccer. There was also more reporting that Rafael Vicky, when he was coaching the U-17s with Gio, was receiving messages and heat from Claudio Reyna about Gio and what was happening in that step. So what I'm trying to say here, this isn't something we're making up. This is actual reporting from ESPN. So I think it's enough where he looks bad. Mm-hmm. Claudio Reyna comes out of this very, very, very bad. And in a sense, if he lost his job, I wouldn't think twice about it. Mm. He may be doing a good job with Austin FC, and that's probably the reason they turned the other cheek. And it's a technical advisor role. He's still getting paid. He's not getting fired. I think that's the reason we're seeing this.
Yep. So he reportedly, according to ESPN, sent messages threatening to reveal sensitive information about Greg Berhalter to U.S. soccer officials. Those reports, Claudio Reyna did eventually end up denying. All right, Claudio Reyna played in the 1995 Copa America, Herc. Did you know that?
I did. Good player.
Where the U.S. made it all the way to the semifinals. I won't tell you who they beat in the quarterfinals. We don't need to talk about it. Well, it's official now. The 2024 Copa America will be played in the U.S. CONCACAF and CONMEBOL announcing a strategic partnership centered around the Copa America, which will be played here next summer. 16 teams, 10 from CONMEBOL, 6 guest teams from CONCACAF. The CONCACAF teams will qualify through the 2023-2024 CONCACAF Nations League. So what feels like a rerun of the Copa America Centenario back in 2016. That's not all. The confederations have also agreed to co-organize a centralized Final Four-style club competition, which will be played for the first time in 2024. It'll feature the best teams from North and South America to each. Clubs will qualify through existing CONCACAF and CONMEBOL tournaments. So think Copa Interamericana, which of course my beloved DC United won back in 1998. And wait, there's more. That's right, the women's game, 2024 CONCACAF W Championship, will feature 12 teams. It'll be played in the U.S. And for the first time, it'll feature 4 guest teams from CONMEBOL. Those will be determined based on Copa America Femenil results. The 8 CONCACAF teams will be the 2 Olympic qualifiers plus 6 others. Wow. Take a breath. Herc, which confederation is getting the sweeter end of this deal? CONMEBOL or CONCACAF?
Strategic partnership. That means they both benefit, right? People are getting lost in this. They both benefit. They both see value. In the immediate, who sees the most value? It's CONCACAF, right? Because they desperately need, they're hosting the World Cup. The U.S., Canada, and Mexico, they desperately need this competition. They need this brushing of the shoulders, this ironing, sharpening iron with no World Cup qualifiers in sight. They absolutely need this. But in the long term, to date, the most lucrative Copa America has been the one here in the States, Centenario. They desperately need the financing, the infrastructure. They need the credibility because they've lost so much of that with corruption over the years in CONMEBOL. This absolutely must happen from there. And this tournament, this club tournament, this smells to me like an introduction for Liga MX and MLS into tournaments like Libertadores and Sudamericana. This is what it looks like. They want a piece of that pie. They want this market. They see the dollars. When you think about CONMEBOL, hey, Brazil, Argentina, top dog. But they're not the only ones in CONMEBOL. And they could desperately use some of that injection of finance.
So great to see, Herc, that the women's game is included. And clearly it's well thought out in this. Because if we look in the short term, to your point, from a competitive standpoint, yes, CONCACAF definitely needs this more and gets more out of it. CONMEBOL is a better confederation when it comes to the men's game. It's the opposite in the women's game, right? What Brazil and Argentina are on the men's side, you could argue the U.S. and Canada very much are on the women's side. So in terms of the competitive, I think it balances out. But to your point, Herc, it's all about the money. And this is not just money, it's infrastructure too. This isn't like a bunch of countries in South America were lining up, opting to host the Copa America 2024. Ecuador was next up in the rotation. They said, we can't do it. They denied it. They turned it down. Yeah. So the United States is stepping in here with the infrastructure. It's going to be huge. And to your point, man, about that TV market, don't sleep, right? We have seen just how successful international club football can be. And it may not be very big right now, right? Libertadores might not rate huge now. But these South American teams, they see exactly what all the European teams see, which is if you can sell your rights in America, you will have many streaming partners with which to dance. There's a lot of money here. And so you don't think a River Boca or a River against an LA Galaxy or a Boca against a Club America would rate in the United States? Or a team from Colombia? We always think about just Brazil and Argentina, but there are clubs all around South America, Herc, with huge followings, and those clubs will benefit massively from breaking into the American market.
I'm just saying, right now, it's a Final Four. This is introductory. You could start seeing MLS clubs, Liga MX clubs, in Copa Libertadores, Sudamericanas. I know what you're thinking. I don't think it's too far off.
Feels kind of like the only way for these two continents to compete with Europe at the end of the day, right? As Europe pulls away and continues to produce at the international level, Argentina pegging one back. But certainly feels like together is the way forward for North and South America if they truly want to compete at the global level. Let's make a sharp U-turn here, Hercules Gomez. To the FA Cup, the fourth round of the FA Cup. Wrexham, of course, the fifth-tier team owned by Hollywood stars Ryan Reynolds, there you see him, and Rob McElhenney, taking on Sheffield United of the Championship, who are three leagues up. And 2 minutes in, Sheffield United jumped into the lead, Herc.
Hey, but it's gonna get better. Don't worry. You got one right here. Finish it, son.
That's right. 50th minute. Ben Toza with a long throw. James Jones making it 1-1. Come on, Ryan Reynolds.
Come on, Van Wilder. Get in there.
All right, so 1-1, 61st minute. Wrexham off the corner kick. Oh, it's a cup set in the making.
It is a cup set, and everybody was cheering for him. Everybody was waiting for it to happen. It was bound to happen. Got his goal.
65th minute. Sheffield United looking for an equalizer. And they're going to get it after some pinball wizardry in the box.
Oh, pinball wizardry. You're just bad defending. Clear the ball.
Oliver Norwood making it 2-2. But don't you worry, Wrexham. Strike right back. Paul Mullen, Super Paul Mullen.
Go ahead, Paulie, go ahead, it's over. Football America's going to England.
You jinxed it, stoppage time. Sheffield United, 3-3. We're headed to a replay. Wrexham so close. So close to the fifth round. Blake Lively, Ryan Reynolds' wife on Instagram. A famous actress in her own right, of course. I bought ESPN Plus today just to watch Football Americas. No, sorry. Just to watch my husband experience crippling anxiety live. Worth it. How about that? Shots fired from Blake Lively. She enjoyed watching her husband Ryan sweat, as did the rest of the world. Many people here in the United States, in fact. So many that folks online took notice. Herc, a lot of MLS fans specifically seem to be a little bit bothered by all the attention that Wrexham was getting over the weekend. So what do you think? Is the attention that Wrexham's getting, the success that this show has had, problematic? Is it bad for MLS? Is it good for MLS? What do you say?
I think the American soccer fan base is among the most complex and insecure in the world. Now, let me explain why it's so complex. You could be a massive fan of the U.S. men's national team or U.S. women's national team and hate Major League Soccer, despise it, not care for it, think it's subpar, even though that may not be the case, right? Or you could be an MLS fan, diehard MLS fan, and not care about anything else. Or maybe you cheer for other ones. There's so many different layers to this. But to be so insecure about it, it's crazy when I think about how young the sport is in this country, modern history, if you will, Major League Soccer, and how it's treated to other young sports, and let's say MMA, UFC. The hardcore fans on the MMA side, they despise casuals. They want nothing to do with casuals. Yet hardcore MLS fans, they yearn for that relevance. They want casuals to acknowledge them. Look at me, we're here. And they say that networks don't do them right, don't do them justice.
And then this network, talk about, they said this network didn't do them right. That's what they said.
Hundreds of millions of dollars invested into the sport. I mean, almost 30 years of being a partner with it. And say what you will, that's fine. I don't go for SportsCenter for my soccer content. But when you have quality storytellers here in the States, Kalen Carr, a good friend of ours, used to do this show called The Movement.
Yep, great
stuff. One of the best pieces of content you can see in American football culture. How far did that go? Things that draw well, guess what? Get attention. And I'm not saying his didn't draw well. I'm talking about Major League Soccer in general. If Major League Soccer was pulling in 1.2 million viewers per some games, you don't think things like this would happen? It doesn't mean it's subpar. It just means it's not there yet, and you don't have to be insecure about it.
This is not bad for Major League Soccer, right? If you think about it this way, right? Anybody who watches Welcome to Wrexham on Hulu or wherever they want to watch it, if they have any interest beyond the storytelling and the local storylines of Wrexham and Wales, right, and the Hollywood glitz and glamour, if they actually have an interest in the soccer, they're not going to go to Wrexham. They're not going to go to the race course ground. They're going to look for a local alternative. Right. Really, they're into soccer, right?
Correct.
And the chances are, if they're in a major city, they will find an MLS option near them. So if anything, it could open the door. It's definitely not a bad thing. To your point about insecurity, I think the insecurity here is wrapped up in one very specific item, and it's the idea of promotion relegation and how important that is to the Wrexham storyline. And then the contrast there where you say, wow, what a storyline Wrexham has. And then you ask, well, does Major League Soccer also have the same storylines around it? Look, MLS is never going to have promotion and relegation. That's fine. That's a choice. The league needs to come up with other storylines. But you can't deny, Herc, that promotion relegation is not only a critical and central part of the Wrexham story and why people are into it so much. In terms of the documentary, it's also critical to the reason why Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney invested their money in it, right? Which is the whole reason why there's a stinking show. So you can't get away from how interesting Wrexham is without acknowledging the value of promotion and relegation or an open system. That doesn't mean that MLS is terrible or that MLS should go pro-rel or that MLS should go to an open system. It just means that we should acknowledge that that's a big part of Wrexham's success. That's what makes it interesting. They could go up or they could go down.
Well, it's not that they can go down. It's how far can they go up? Because you see the investment by these two stars. And listen, if it takes Van Wilder and Mac from It's Always Sunny for you to watch a soccer game, mm-hmm. and that's what you want to do, fine. But I think you've hit the nail on the head here. It's about the possibility of them starting something from scratch and seeing how far I can go. And then two quality content creators documenting said thing. Major League Soccer has done things like this, mm-hmm. but they just don't have the investment from the fans. Now, doesn't mean you're a bad fan. It just means there are not enough of you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Everybody talks about the Apple deal. That's one of the points. There will be plenty of space for this type of content around Major League Soccer. Hopefully it brings more fans to the league because the investment, as we know, certainly is there. Elsewhere in the FA Cup, Manchester City taking on Arsenal. Ooh, this was the game of the round in the fourth round. Matt Turner getting the start. 9 minutes in, coming out and trying to deal with Erling Haaland. How'd he do, Herc?
Look at him. Look at Neuer right there. No, that's Matt Turner. Did perfect. Kept it out.
Into the second half, still scoreless. Kevin De Bruyne ascending in the cross.
Yeah, he took a bit of a fall on that shoulder right there. Was attended to right after that, but he'd be okay.
A few minutes after that, Turner called into question again, getting down low.
That's not an easy save. It looks like a save. It's snuffing out that cross. Very difficult right there.
Manchester City would get their breakthrough here. Nathan Ake, is Turner at fault?
No, Turner's not at fault. The defender who turned his back on that is at fault.
Manchester City going up 1-0. Another chance late. Julian Alvarez, the World Cup winner, shooting, but Matt Turner up to the job, makes the save in the end. Manchester City advance. Here we see the fifth round draw, which just went down today. Should Wrexham beat Sheffield United in the replay, they would get Spurs in the next round of the FA Cup. Of course, the FA Cup available exclusively here on ESPN Plus.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Transfer news, Herc. Weston McKennie to Leeds is done. The 24-year-old joining Leeds on loan from Juventus until the end of the season. There's an option for a £35 million or $43 million permanent transfer this summer if Leeds stay up. He's the fifth American at the Premier League club between the squad and the technical staff. Joins Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, Jesse Marsh, and recently appointed assistant coach Chris Armas. Here he is earlier today.
Dream come true for me, honestly. I've been wanting to play in the Premier League for a long time. I think, you know, as a kid coming over to Europe, I grew up in Germany, so my first thought obviously was to go back to Germany, but after Germany, my second choice was for sure Premier League, and now I get to live out my dream.
You're really a dream with a team that's got quite a few USA connections. You've got Tyler Adams, you've got Brendan as well, and the coach. I mean, does it feel like a home from home when you're back into Leeds?
Yeah, for me it does, you know. Just to be able to play with, like you said, Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, for club and for country, it makes it a lot more easier to settle in with a familiar face around. So for me, I'm excited to get going because I know how we play together at national team, how we click and how we connect, and ready to have that here as well.
So what do you think you can bring to Leeds? We saw you in the World Cup, you know, obviously a big player for the US. So what can you bring to Leeds in their situation as well right now? Wrong end of the Premier League table.
No, I mean, hopefully I can bring good energy, fresh energy, goals and defensive work and everything, just a good work ethic, and hopefully all together we can turn it all around and gather as much points as we can in the second half of the season.
When did you find out about the Leeds interest? Because for a while it seems that you've been leaving Juventus and Leeds was connected to it this out of the window.
Yeah, no, so this, I want to say like 2 weeks ago was like the first initial interest, and for me I looked at it and I was thinking like, oh, okay, well that could be good for me because Leeds fit my style. Leeds they identify with everything that I identify with, and I have two teammates here that, you know, one of them I feel like me and him kind of play similar in a way, And he fits in well. So obviously I made my calls to Tyler, made my calls to Brendan, to some of my people that I trust, and asked them about it. And everyone's like, you fit right in. So, yeah.
Was it important that they were here, or would you make the move anyway?
No, honestly, for me, it my whole decision was based on if I fit in the system or not, and can I thrive there, and can I be myself and play my style of football. And obviously it was like a cherry on top of the cake having them here as well. So yeah.
So what do you know about Leeds as a football team?
Honestly, it's going to come surprising to you guys. Maybe I don't watch football at all. So I don't know a lot about any clubs, but I do know a little bit of the history and, you know, two championships, Europe championships, I mean. But other than that, I know the fans are fantastic. I know the area is a one city club, so the support's unreal, but that's about it.
And do you sense there's a growing acknowledgement or recognition of Leeds in the US because you've got the players, because you've got Jesse Marsh, and because the ownership has, you know, San Francisco 49ers elements too as well? Are Leeds becoming a big thing in the US?
Yeah, I 1,000% think so, for sure. Leeds is a club that, like you said, you have a big American following because you also have American players here, but also I think Leeds is a well-known club around the world in general. But having Americans here and U.S. following as well, I think it's getting bigger as well.
Just actually one question about the U.S. as well. You know, you're going through a situation with coach right now. Do you think, have you spent your time in Europe, the time has now come for the U.S. to look to the European game to hire a coach, or do you have to keep it in the U.S. and the U.S. coach, U.S. manager?
Honestly, I think whichever way that situation goes, it'll happen. For me, I'm not really biased on whether it needs to be a European coach or American coach. I mean, obviously, we did well with Greg Berhalter as a coach, and we clicked and we all connected well, and we put on a performance at the World Cup that everyone was actually happy with. So whatever decision happens, it happens, and hopefully the players can have an influence as well.
Kirk, the move to Leeds is official. There's Weston McKinney one-on-one with our Mark Ogden. He says it's a dream come true. He also said it's a perfect fit. Kirk, you agree?
Playing in the Premier League for him, yeah, I agree. It's a dream come true. Perfect fit. He's got the playing style to match the frantic pace that Jesse Marsh demands out of that team. I do think it's a good fit. A perfect fit remains to be seen. A lot of factors at play here.
Anything else stand out to you about the interview there with Mark?
Yeah, he was noncommittal about the coach, about the future, whether it would be American or European or any of that for that matter. And also, not surprised that he said he doesn't watch football. I always find it interesting when footballers say they don't watch football.
How much of an upgrade is this for Weston McKennie? Goes from Juventus, where he was starting pretty much every game, at least
recently,
the start of the calendar year.
Yeah.
Now to the Premier League, but to a team that is, if not in, close to a relegation fight.
It's in a relegation fight. I mean, you're 15th place right now. I think three points outside of that relegation fight. Yeah, absolutely a relegation fight. If you think about it, 12 on, from like 12th on, which I believe is Crystal Palace, to 20th, they're all in that relegation zone. So it's a dangerous
place. Down? It's a step down?
Well, I don't think it can be much more of a step down from a team right now that's in financial trouble, that was docked 15 points, that's not going to be in Europe next season, and it's going to be on a fire sale with the majority of his players. I think it was a natural progression. If you can make it to the Premier League, you made it to the Premier League, but I don't think it's a step down at all.
Not at all?
No.
Okay.
No.
Leeds a step up then from Juventus. We're still in Europa League this year, Herc. This year, by the way. What does it mean for Jesse Marsh? He's now added another American to the mix. More pressure?
Yeah, man. I know we spoke about this narrative last week, Seb, but Jesse Marsh comes in mid-season for a very beloved Marcelo Bielsa, and one of the big acquisitions, first acquisitions, was Brendan Aaronson. Along with Brendan Aaronson comes in Tyler Adams. And then while they're still struggling, because mind you, they've only won twice in the last, I believe, like 14 games, okay? He brings in Chris Armas, his buddy, and another American coach. So there's already this narrative building that the 49ers, the American ownership, Jesse Marsh, the American coach, brought in two of his players and another American coach. And then guess what? He's gonna bring in another American over. This is one of those situations where now Jesse Marsh has no excuses. It's not midway through the campaign, and he's gotten a chance to really impact this roster, bringing in players and bringing in personnel that he thinks will give him the best fighting chance of staying up. So it really is a lot more pressure on Jesse Marsh, who not too long ago, like literally over a week ago, had to bat away rumors and reports that there was a revolt in his locker room, that there were certain players against him. So there's this narrative that he's losing points, not doing well, and now that he's losing their locker room while bringing in a more of an American presence, yes, the pressure is absolutely there.
Yeah. You played with or against Jesse Marsh?
Against. Remind me.
Okay. So you know his personality well. He seems like the type of guy to run towards the punch.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes Jesse Marsh great. I think that's very evident in the way his teams play and in the way he manages, right?
Yeah.
I think he might be running towards the punch a little too much here, but that's who Jesse Marsh is, right? It's almost like he's saying not only is an American going to come to the Premier League and succeed, he's going to do it with other Americans. He's going to spend this club's money on other Americans. The other guy that Leeds was linked to for this job was Unahi. Remember the number 8 that caught everybody's attention from Morocco at the World Cup? And he ends up going to Marseille for not a ton of money. So it seems like Weston McKennie was really chosen over some pretty good other options here by Jesse Marsh and Leeds. If that is the case, that's significant. But also, we have to assume American ownership is on board with this. They're not going to let Jesse Marsh do this and then fire him in a couple weeks, right? This is a vote of confidence. This has to be.
I don't know how much they'd be pulling the strings here. I think Jesse's got a vote of confidence in Weston. It's a loan. It's like 1.2 million euros, right? Mm-hmm. But if he plays in like 10 games and they avoid relegation, it triggers that buy clause of like 32 million euros. It's a purchase. There's almost 90 million euros on 3 American players for a team that at one point 2 years ago you thought was on the up under Marcelo Bielsa. And is Jesse by no means has made people forget about Marcelo Bielsa, even though he did poorly towards the end and was let go. So this is one of those where I'm running into the punch, like you said.
Forget where they were 2 years ago. Right now they're in this relegation fight and the fans will lose their patience. Because eventually, Leeds is a club that doesn't want to just be in a relegation fight, right? They want to be something else. And if these American guys come and it's either fighting for relegation or just barely above that, that's still going to lead to pressure on Jesse Marsh and his job there at Leeds United. All right, Herc, let's check in on some other Americans in Europe. John Brooks, who's back in the Bundesliga with Hoffenheim. He started, played 90 minutes in a 4-1 loss to Borussia Mönchengladbach over the weekend. Got a deal through the summer of 2024, Herc. He's only 30 years old. And he was, of course, left out of the World Cup squad by Greg Berhalter. But do you think he still has a role with the national team moving forward?
Listen, Tim Ream has made me question everything I thought about age when it comes to this U.S. men's national team. Tim Ream that pretty much played the same amount of time in the last year as John Anthony Brooks with the U.S. men's national team, and per Greg Berhalter, was in the same boat, being too slow and not athletic enough to manage a high line, and yet he made it to the World Cup, and he was one of the better players at the World Cup, so I'm not discounting John Anthony Brooks making a run for 2026.
Brooks stayed straight into the fire against Gladbach over the weekend, playing against Joe Scally and Borussia Mönchengladbach. They ended up beating Hoffenheim again by the final score of 4-1. For more transfer news, actually kind of free agency news here, really. Sean Johnson signing with Toronto FC as a free agent. The U.S. international, of course, spent the last 6 seasons with New York City FC, where he won an MLS Cup, also was MLS Cup MVP in 2021. Johnson, a part of the U.S. World Cup team at the last World Cup in Qatar. The 33-year-old now playing for Bob Bradley and Toronto FC. From MLS to Liga MX, Diego Lainez returns to Mexico, Herc, joining Tigres on loan from Real Betis. The 22-year-old Mexican international on a 1-year loan. This after missing out on the World Cup, after he failed to catch on at Real Betis in Spain or Braga and Portugal following that big money move from Club America. He will reportedly earn 2 million pesos a month, Herc. That makes him the highest paid Mexican player in Liga MX. What do you say, Herc? At 22 years old, have we seen the end of Diego Lainez in Europe?
There are levels to Europe, right? Mm-hmm. So you can potentially go to Sweden, or you can go to some lower team, tier team in Belgium, and that is Europe. Fine. But to where everybody expected Diego Lainez to be, to use, because the decision was Ajax or Real Betis, that was supposed to be the stepping stone to bigger and better. You're not going to get bigger and better regardless of how it goes for him this year. The reality here is they want to get rid of Diego Lainez. Real Betis, they want him gone. They want his salary off the books. They no longer want him on the roster. And one of the few teams that could take on that salary, and this is the sad part for Diego Lainez, is it was Tigres, $2 million net a year. At 22 years of age, Diego Lainez, I think if you add up his goals scored between national team and club since he left for Europe, is like 13 goals, 14 assists. That would make him the highest earning Mexican player of Liga MX right now. It's telling you everything you need to know about Diego Lainez and the Mexican setup, that he prefers. Mm. He prefers to go back to a team where he's well paid, but maybe won't play, because this is not development. By going to Tigres, this doesn't guarantee him playing time. Now, nowhere should you be guaranteed playing time, but Diego Lainez and a team like Tigres, that's notorious for having money to spend on players and not caring about if they have to play or not. Hey, you earn your way here. If you're the highest paid player on the team and you can't get off the bench, that is on you. We have that type of money. He's going into that setup right now. That is what worries me for Diego Lainez and his potential of getting back to Europe, which I see very slim.
I hope this isn't the end of Diego Lainez and his European dream, but it feels like it. It feels like it, because not only is he coming back, but he's coming back to probably the worst situation possible to make the jump back from, right? I mean, maybe he could have signed at Rayados. Would that have been worse? Cruz Azul, would that have been worse? I mean, maybe there's a few places that are marginally worse, but Tigres is about as bad as it gets. One, because they're going to be paying him well, more than probably most European teams will want. They'll jack up his value more than most European teams will want to pay. And two, he's probably, to your point and to the point of the graphic that we just saw, hardly going to get the opportunities that would give him the launch pad necessary to get some European attention and eventually get back. I would almost, and I know when this idea was floated a couple months ago, I would almost rather see him in Major League Soccer than at Tigres. Actually, I think I would rather see him in MLS than at Tigres for a chance at maybe returning to Europe. Let's forget the European return for a second, though, Herc. Do you think Diego Lainez is done? Do you think he's done being a relevant player? Do you think he's done being a national team player, a national team discussed player, as he comes back from Europe at just 22 years old?
Oof. When you look at the options, let's say it's Miguel Herrera. Miguel Herrera was the one who said he wasn't ready to go to Europe. So seeing him in a setup with Miguel Herrera, I don't know how that dynamic would work, if he'd be to his liking. And if it's Guillermo Almada or Marcelo Bielsa, which are the two other names circulating in FMF in their orbit, the way they play with that chaotic system, I don't see him fitting in. I don't think he would be that type of player. He'd get lost in the shuffle. And here's the most important thing. Diego Lainez is banking on getting a run of games in the CONCACAF Champions League with Tigres. I don't see him being an out-and-out, day-to-day starter with Tigres. He's not going to beat out Quiñones right now, who's playing on another level. Nico Ibáñez, who they spent $11 million on and who's the reigning golden boot. And André Pierre Gignac, so that front line right there, when you look at it, you're not moving any of those three. So where does he fit in? These are things that I really question Diego Lainez and his camp.
Diego Lainez, once the young promise of Mexican soccer, returns to Tigres on loan from Real Betis. Let's keep our eye on the transfer window as it is closing, Hercules Gomez. We got some late reports today. Multiple reports actually out of Spain that Barcelona are in talks with the LA Galaxy for Julián Araujo, who has also been linked to Porto in this window. The deal would likely include some Barcelona B minutes, where he would have Rafa Márquez as his coach. Ooh, that could be interesting there. Potential move for the 21-year-old Mexican-American defender for the LA Galaxy. That's not the only transfer talk of interest. Jedi Robinson has been linked with not just any move, a massive move. The 25-year-old U.S. World Cup left back has been linked to Manchester City, according to reports from Turkish journalist Ekrem Konur. That's a big move, Herc. Jedi Robinson to Manchester City. Of course, we know Joao Cancelo reportedly heading to Bayern Munich. So, Herc, which would be a better move? Julian Araujo to Barcelona or Anthony Robinson to Manchester City? They both sound like dream moves to me.
Yeah, dream moves for sure. I don't know which move makes sense, if I'm being honest, just on styles. But Julian Araujo is not the first time we've heard his name mentioned around the Barcelona orbit. And he also came out of the Barcelona Academy here in the States. So there is a little bit of crossover there, a little bit, I guess, of it just makes a bit more sense. That said, if he goes, it would be as a Barca B player with the intention of moving up into that first team. So maybe it's great for his development with Rafa Márquez, and that could be great seeing how that goes. I really don't see this for Jedi. Like, there's a few things that don't make sense about this move or about this in general. It's this Man City. There's a certain element when it comes to their outside backs and how they play and the pedigree, if you will, of those players. I don't know if this makes sense. I think he's a very good player, but he's not known for being quality with the ball at his feet.
Is there something to be said, Herc, for being a squad player for one of the best teams in the world? Because maybe that's what Anthony Robinson would be. Maybe he's not the ideal left back that Pep Guardiola is going to start in 50 or 60% of the games, but maybe somebody Pep Guardiola could trust, because this is not the first link that we've heard of Anthony Robinson to Manchester City. There may be genuine interest. Would it be so bad to be the second left back getting big games potentially at a club like Manchester City, one
Absolutely
injury
not.
Away from starting?
Absolutely.
Because Julian
not.
Araujo, this move for Julian Araujo is still acres and acres away, it feels, from first team minutes, right? Sergiño Dest is not even getting first team minutes at Barcelona. You think,
well,
Julian Araujo is?
Sergiño Dest was like, what, 20 million as a right back? He'd be going, and Julian would be going as a player potentially for the B team with
exactly.
First team
so
minutes.
Dest isn't getting minutes. You think Araujo is? I think Robinson's probably much closer to minutes here at Manchester
Man,
City,
this is
especially
such a,
considering the Joao Cancelo news.
I can't just. No part of me says this makes sense from a stylistic standpoint. When I think of Man City players, there's a certain pedigree that come with Man City players, and I love Anthony
pedigree.
Robinson.
What are you saying? He's not technical enough? Is that kind of what we're getting at here with
well,
Jedi?
Well, that's not pedigree, but yeah, I don't think he's technical enough to be at City. Pedigree would be more, you know, your formation, the clubs you've been at, what you've done. I don't think, with all due respect to Fulham and before that Everton and that academy system, the U.S. men's national team at 25 years of age as a left back would propel you for many to think you're ready for Man City. But if Pep Guardiola thinks he's ready for Man City, who am I to question Pep Guardiola? I'm not questioning Pep Guardiola. I'm questioning the validity of how this actually makes sense.
Right.
That's what I'm questioning.
All right, well, the window closes tomorrow. So we should find out soon enough, right? Whether Julian Araujo is going to Barcelona and whether Anthony Robinson is going to Manchester City. Let's run it back with El Tri now, Herc, because we had some goals. Santiago Jimenez, his fourth Eredivisie goal of the league of the year for Feyenoord.
El Bebote. That's four league, four Europa for him. That's 8 goals total. Got to start again right here. Man, he's heating up. He's heating up.
First goal as a starter for Santiago Jimenez. It comes in a 1-1 draw against Twente. As Feyenoord very much in a top of the table race for the title in the Eredivisie. In Greece, Orbelin Pineda, his 7th league goal of the season for AEK.
Yeah, that's in the last 8 games, 5 goals, 2 assists. This man is on fire. He is on another level. A lot of people, and I was one of them, questioned that move away from Celta de Vigo to the Greek league, but he's been making the most of it.
You know who's questioning that move right now? Celta de Vigo, why'd you let him go? AEK Athens, 3-0 winners over Aris in the Greek league. They are right now atop the table. How about that? Memo Ochoa and Salernitana not quite atop the table, but they did get their first win since Memo joined the club.
All right, I saw this crazy stat that their social media, the league's social media, Serie A's social media put out. Since Memo Ochoa started playing in Serie A, he's got more saves than any other goalkeeper in the top five European leagues.
Let's go! They beat Lecce by a final score of 2-1. ESPN Plus, your home for La Liga. Wednesday, Real Betis against Barcelona. 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Coverage starts right here on Plus. Parting shot, the National Women's Soccer League is reportedly set to add not one, not two, but three expansion teams, two to join the league in 2024. Utah, San Francisco Bay Area, and Boston are set to be the next expansion sites, with two of the new teams, Herc, set to pay a record $50 million in franchise fees. What do you think about that?
Let me know when you're ready for Las Vegas. That's what I think about that.
Oh, okay. Are you promising some seed money, some investment money?
We can talk.
Okay, all right. Las Vegas NWSL. I like the idea.
But think about this, Seb. This is ground up. $50 million right now seems like an incredible number from where this league or versions of this league
Oh, yeah. Were. Just a few years ago, you could get an NWSL franchise for less than 10, maybe even less than $5 million. Now you're talking about 50. Interesting that they're returning to Boston. Of course, the Boston Breakers, a franchise that never quite got off the ground. Let's see if round two there in Boston.
New England is still around.
Better
so.
Than round one. There he is, Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. You had the 8-bit there on your shirt.
Yeah, what do you got?
I got the scenes from Buenos Aires there. You see el obelisco after the Argentina's World Cup Championship. Actually, in the middle of all that is Messi, Herc, talking about how hard the game against Mexico was because it was the toughest that Argentina had in the whole World Cup. You can check out that debate on the ESPN FC YouTube channel. We discussed that before the show.
Man. Tell him, Lexi.
Come on.